we can see the good, the bad, and the ugly in history without saying the text is at fault, in the same way that we can look at the good, bad, and the ugly in the events of history without saying God is at fault, without saying God is evil. So I commit a sin. It's under the providence of God in history. And yet it would be wrong for me to say, well, God is the one who caused me to sin, and therefore God is to blame. I'm doing a similar move with the scriptures. The scriptures are God-breathed, God-ordained. People have used them sinfully. I don't want to then say the scriptures are to blame for that sinful use of the scripture. Mm-hmm. So it's just an analogy between God's control of all the events of history, saying God's control of the text and its use in history, the good, mm-hmm. the bad, and the ugly. And that is to say that God will use his word the way he wants. And sometimes we see this, this idea that in Romans chapter 1, for example, that God will allow people to go unto themselves, right? He will let them go into their sin. And that's a sign of judgment, that he lets people loose. He doesn't challenge them anymore. I think he does that with his word among people who are people who have rejected him. They're going to misuse his words. They're going to twist the scripture.
So is misinterpretation, or is, let me say this, is bad interpretation a sign that you've rejected God? Meaning, could there be someone who's genuinely, innocently embraces God, is obviously from your understanding, who gets things wrong? Is that possible as well?
Yes, yes. So yeah, I'm taking the extreme cases maybe here, but okay. But yeah, as we were saying before, you can't always infer from the events of providence things about a person. Like
let me throw out an example. Sorry, finish what you're saying. I apologize.
So you can't always infer somebody has a bad interpretation of this passage. You're like, no, that's not really good. You can't necessarily judge the state of their soul before God based on the bad interpretation. That's not exactly what we would say in line with the doctrine of providence. You can't just say that. Mm-hmm. But what I am saying is, when you do see bad fruit, so to speak, in history, you can, what you're not going to connect it to is the scriptures. What you are going to connect it to is the fact that God can use his word in any way that he chooses, both to bless and to curse. And so there's a sense of, maybe it's supposed to encourage us to have a sense of fear and trembling, or what I call a humbled sensitivity to the way that this text in my hands could be misused. So you're gaining that sensitivity to the fact that I need to, if I'm going to use this text, I need to make sure that it's in line with what I call the love command. You know, the love, the two commands that Jesus says are the great command, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, right, from the Shema, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, being able to coordinate my use of this text with a hermeneutical principle like that, which, you know, we see in Irenaeus.
Tell us what a hermeneutical principle is for the audience.
A principle for guiding interpretation. The way I use a text. We see this very early on, Irenaeus, Origen, these ancient scholars of the scriptures are saying, you know, you need to make sure that love determines the way you use a text. We all do that imperfectly, but I think being able to see the good, the bad, and the ugly throughout history should help us to reorient ourselves so that if I know Matthew 23 has been used for anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic polemic, say by German Christians in the early 20th century, I need to be very aware that in my hands, this text, I could repeat history, repeat the same mistakes, or I could be sensitive to that and make sure that I am not doing that, even as I seek to fully understand the text. So I'm not discarding the text. I'm not repudiating the text. Instead, I'm holding the text in light of what I've learned about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and saying, here's a different way to understand it that's different from Ernst Haeckel, you know. So
let's assume our audience doesn't know, because I'm not sure that I do. How was Matthew 23 used in a, I'll just call it let's call it anti-Jewish context, right? Yeah. I prefer to call it anti-Semitic, but let's just be neutral. An anti-Jewish context. How? Because I actually... like I said, I skimmed your dissertation for the parts that I was interested in.
Yeah.
Give us some, did you talk about that in the dissertation? So give us some examples of that and how divine providential history plays into that.
You have been listening to Hebrew Voices. To hear the rest of this conversation, head over to nehemiahswall.com and become a support team member today.